Hey folks, it's time to respond to all of your juicy questions and thoughts and comments about the Pan Political series, starting today with the first of two episodes on that. Okay, so from here, I'd like to go through various bits of feedback I've received from the Pan Political series, and in some cases just read that out to you as it was, as I received it, and in other cases I'll chime in with some responses or some extra bits of content. And I'd like to get that started with just a sort of a general overall summary of the landscape of the feedback I've received. So in general, it's fair to say that this whole series has gone down extremely well. It's by far the best, well, best might not be the right word. I was going to say the best podcasting thing I've done. If we're looking at the number of additional listeners that have arrived, then yes, this is by far the best podcast thing that I've done. I think it's been nearly 10 years that I've been doing this funny little podcast, and it's just been on a gradual build the entire time. But in the course of this Pan Political series, starting at the start of 2025, listenership has gone up by 10 times, which is just absolutely huge. And I've also seen a jump in the number of people signing up for the Curious Creatures mailing list, which I'm not quite sure what I'm doing with at the moment, but, you know, something will happen. So the feedback I've received is a long, long way from what you'd describe as, like, you know, flat or dead or disinterested. It's definitely been lively. And I also don't want to drop feedback into the category of, you know, positive or negative, but maybe that's a useful framework. The absolute vast majority of the feedback I've received has been positive or extremely positive, probably way more than I expected when I clicked the first publish button. That said, I guess most people would say that not all of that feedback has been positive. I'll get into that a little more in a minute. To give you a bit of a summary and a bit of a sense of what that feedback has been like, I tend to think of these things in terms of roles that are in the field. So I'll just sort of summarise. I think I've got about 8 roles here. The first role is what you might call relieved or inspired. So this is people who are overwhelmed at the state of, you know, the gender equality debate, and maybe depressed, and I'm not joking when I say, in a couple of cases, suicidal about the general state of play. Like, this stuff is real. This stuff is serious. And these are people who, on some level, sort of knew that there must be more going on and there must be a different way to look at things and there must be something which is a little bit fairer on everyone or something like that, but they just couldn't find it. And for whatever reason, they've found Pan Political and they are relieved. As one person said, quote, "I've been looking for people to have this dialogue with my whole life," unquote. The next role in the field is what you might call gender movement one-siders. So these are people who were either pretty firmly locked on to one side of the gender debate. So either strongly and singularly supportive of women's issues, or strongly and singularly supportive of men's issues. So I just want to really stress that this Pan Political content has found people at both ends of that spectrum and brought them, I guess you'd say, towards the middle. So I don't know if that's quite the right language. It doesn't matter. Either way, frankly, I couldn't be happier because that's exactly where I see this content as well. It's for everyone. The next role in the field, this is not a very snappy title, but I guess you might call them initially angry and then conciliatory. And why did I laugh just then? I'm only laughing because it's been funny as it's played out. So this has been people who are kind of closer to me and have got, you know, like, you know, my number or something like that. And it's just popped up like quite a few times, I don't know, half a dozen times, where someone will be like listening away and they're like, oh yeah, let's see what you put out here, Rog. And they're going along fine, and then something just hits them the wrong way, or something strikes a nerve, or is too sensitive, or just feels too wrong, and they respond to me with a really powerful, and I guess you'd say negative, emotional reaction. So they're either really angry, or they're really, you know, saddened, or let down, or confused as to why I would say something that I said, or something like that. And I've sort of learned to, like, just let it be, to just let people sit with it. And the reason I've called this role initially angry and then conciliatory is because in most cases, 20 minutes later, I get another message saying, I am so sorry. I just had a big old reaction to something you said. I've had more of a think about it now. I realize it's not your job to save me from that reaction, or, you know, whatever. And I can kind of see the point of what you're saying. Or maybe it's like, you know, I think I just disagree with that particular point, but, you know, I can see it in the context of the rest of what you're saying. You know, that's cool. I can live with it. So that's that conciliatory part. And like those exchanges, the reason I laugh is because, yeah, those exchanges have been quite fun and funny for both of us, I guess, after the event, and particularly once I sort of spotted that that pattern was happening. Next role is what you might call eyes open now. So for a bunch of people, this is sort of the first time they've thought about the nuance of the way we look at gender in our world, and the nuance of who we criticize, who we laugh at, where our awareness is, and all that sort of stuff. And now that they're aware of it, they're seeing it everywhere. And so this is a group of people who are often also sending me articles, either ones that they might be passionately disagreeing with and suspecting I would passionately disagree with, or the opposite, are very agreeable articles. And essentially they're just seeing it everywhere, and they're really hungry to engage about the topic. Yeah, love that. The next role in the field is pretty similar. I'm calling it the solution seeker. So that's someone who's saying something like, this is it, this is the solution, or at least it's the best one I've seen. They're also going a step further and say, I want to get this out of the world. I want to get this out into the world. I want to get it in front of government. I want to get it in front of police. I want to get it in education, and so forth. So yeah, solution seeker. The next role in the field, you might call challenged and chunky. And so that role would sort of say something like, yeah, loving it, but it's incredibly chunky work. And I most cottoned onto this role when there was actually like quite a few people who were really enjoying it, finding it really challenging material, because it just goes so counter to everything they thought was fixed and true and the only way to view the world, or at least the world of gender. And the perspectives that I've expressed here in Pan Political, on the one hand, they stack up enough and they make sense. They don't sound like the talk of a crazy person, even if, let's face it, none of us are going to agree on every one of the issues, individual issues in there. But in general, the challenged and chunky is finding it to be, yeah, interesting and compelling, but just a lot of work. And a couple of them described it as being sort of chunky-like therapy, in that, you know, when you have a really solid therapy session, you need a fair bit of integration time and a fair bit of thinking time, and you need to sit with stuff and talk it through. So yeah, challenged and chunky. And I guess lastly, and sorry if I've missed your role in this list, by the way, but I guess the last role that I'm thinking about at the moment is what I guess you might call the hater, or perhaps more accurately, the polarized. So this is a role in the field which says, look, you're either on one side or the other side. So yeah, it's a perspective that says, I guess, that they're mostly, I guess I'm speaking in general here about roles I've bumped into, this role I've bumped into over the years, because I've only actually bumped into one person, literally one person, occupying this role over the course of this Pan Political series. So it's a perspective that says, look, women are suffering incredible issues here. We're trying to solve those issues. We've made a little bit of progress, but there is so much more work to be done. And it just feels horrible to have the attention distracted and confused by these silly little men's issues that are being dressed up as something more serious. I don't know if that's a fair representation of that role. That's how it comes across to me. So I've bumped into that role over the years, for sure, but in the course of this particular recording, I've only bumped into it literally one time, which really surprised me. I suspect that there's more people in the background that have probably drifted from my circles, or at least drifted from this podcast. And in the majority of cases, they, you know, have got no need to let me know. They've just gone their own way. So I suspect there's more than just the one person I've bumped into. But yeah. And look, it's I find those conversations to be incredibly displeasing. The way they normally go down is that someone picks up on some specific detail of something I've said that they don't agree with, and we get into a really low quality argument about that topic. And I hate it because it's not the point. That the conversation plays out in a really unproductive way. It's like I almost wind up in the position of arguing for ways that men are messed around only because the person I'm talking with is only familiar with ways that women are messed around in this world. I find that sad because that's not my perspective. I'm in favour of everyone's issues. It's just that the other person is singularly interested in one person's issues, so I find myself on the other side. So it gets that the system itself makes the conversation polarised. But I just really hate it because the conversation for me is not about a race to the bottom of the victim pile to work out who's the biggest victim. And it almost feels in those conversations like that's the space we're competing for. And I don't see it that way. To the extent that I'm interested in looking at men's issues more than, let's say, you know, the gender debate does at other times, a main reason why I am interested in that is because I don't think it's useful enough to just articulate the way women are messed around in this world and to identify that women are oftentimes, mostly, a lot of the time, messed around by men. I think that's really important. But the thing for me is to ask the question, why are men behaving that way? Because just complaining about the problem doesn't change it. I'm trying to scratch under the surface and work out what's creating men that would behave that way. And it's in doing that that I start to arrive at a position of going, you know what? Men are not having the best time. And it's in articulating that that we start to get to the point where we can change that male behavior, which is going to wind up being so much better for women. But sadly, in these polarized conversations with what I'm calling the hater role, I just don't get to that level of detail. And I hate it. Even though I know this pattern over and over, I don't quite have the skill to avoid it in the moment. I'm not that quick or that sharp in a conversation. So I can't avoid the pitfall. And it's just bad for everyone. I don't like myself coming out of those conversations, even when I'm doing my very best to stay chill and stay de-escalated. Yeah. And it's part of the reason I chose this format. The nine original episodes in the Pan Political series, because I just think that the points I'm trying to make come across much better in that really carefully thought out long form style of dialogue, as opposed to those quick, sharp, short conversations. So yeah, look, sadly, I lost a close friend of 30 years, the one particular person that I did have this exchange with over this last year, unfortunately, was a really close one. So I'm really sad about that. I don't want to put a silver lining around things, but I am delighted to have gained many, many, many more people around me who, you probably can't see this on the podcast, although you can hear it now. I've just got a big smile on my face. Many, many more people who are up for really nuanced, often really passionate, but passionate in a productive way, conversations about all this gender stuff. My God, I've had so many fun conversations with people that I agree with and disagree with to various degrees, and both of us are shifting and changing our positions. I love that. I love the people that are around me. There's only been, you know, a relatively subtle shift in my social circle on account of this series. But yeah, I like it. And I now live in a world where I don't have people in my life so much who just simply don't like men or don't like men's issues. And even though that's not my gender identity in terms of how the world sees me and how I'm treated and socialized, I might as well say, yeah, I'm effectively a man in this conversation. So yeah, I like that I live in a world where I don't have misandrists around me anymore, in exactly the same way that I wouldn't want the women around me or the women, any woman in the world, to live amongst misogyny. So in a lot of ways, I like the way this has played out. How about that capitalism, huh? I want to talk with you about a weird way that capitalism is actually kind of functional. It's to do with this podcast. Firstly, I want to stress it's okay for you to just listen to this and not contribute. I say just listen because it's not nothing. By just listening to it, you're engaging with my material, you're probably having chats about it with others, and really, that's all I'm doing this for. I can tell that you are there because I can see you in the total number of downloads, and it means a lot to me. This relationship works for me. It's okay to just listen. At the same time, I know that some of you want to show a more active level of support and are in a position to do so. This is where capitalism comes into it and doesn't actually do a half bad job. I've set up a Patreon page, which, in short, is an easy way for you to contribute. And it's very meaningful to me. I used to be skeptical about paying for podcasts, but eventually I had to ask myself how it differs from paying for books, or for videos, or for workshops, or for therapy, all of which I pay for pretty consistently. And this, my friends, is my version of a book, or a workshop, or a whatever. So I feel okay about asking for a donation through Patreon, if you're in a position to do so, and this has been meaningful for you. So the link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. If you're not in a position to contribute, please don't feel guilty about listening to this for free. I appreciate you, and I appreciate having you on this ride with me. Okay, so the first bit of feedback I want to mention, it's actually just to expand on one of the roles I was just talking about. And that's the person who has an initially strong reaction. Actually, it sort of cuts across a couple of the roles I just mentioned. A sort of a reaction to the content here, which is to say that, if we give up the focus on women's issues, there's just something about that that feels really wrong. And all I really wanted to say is I acknowledge that fear. I know it feels like that. I think that's a really understandable response. And if you're still here, thank you for sticking with it and coming along with me on the journey. I wouldn't be putting this content out if I thought it was bad for anyone. I think this is great for everyone. But I really acknowledge the fear of shifting away from what is very solid, established, reinforced thinking about these topics historically. Okay, next bit of feedback, and I'm not quite, but more or less reading word for word here. Quote, it's changed the way I look at the men around me, how I listen to their concerns. It's changed how I respond to their requests to be included in women's spaces. I have previously wanted to empower women with anger, but I wonder now about who gets caught in the crossfire. It's not a victimless crime. End quote. Okay. The next bit of feedback I received is in the form of a question, and I got this from a few people actually, and the question is, how do I run gender separate spaces sustainably? Or, you know, how do I run gender separate spaces without causing the harms that were identified in Panpolitical? So I love the spirit behind the question. Thank you. I really do. I'm really touched. I've got two main points. First main point is to ask yourself if you really need to run it separately. So in response to that, like a lot of people sort of immediately answer, well, yeah, I do for safety reasons. It's just not safe, in a mixed gender environment. And I don't know if it's always meant that way, but that often comes across as implying sort of physical safety. It doesn't matter too much whether that's true or not true. But I guess I'd suggest, inquire, drill down in that a little bit. Like, is it really about safety? Because not many of the spaces we're talking about, when it's to do with like self-development or social groups or hanging out, Not many of those spaces are likely to be actual physical safety issues. Like, given that they're controlled environments, everything's in clear sight, everyone knows everyone, everyone knows what's going on. So yeah, I think it's worth drilling down into that a little bit more. And maybe it's more about something that you might regard as emotional safety. Like, for instance, if it's some kind of self-development group or support group, is it still a group where you can be honest and vulnerable and open? Or if mixed genders are present, or is just like, does the presence of another gender make that a less safe space, make you less free to speak? If that's the case, I suggest lean into that. I think the issue there is a lot to do with how facilitation or ownership of the group or ownership of the event is done, and whether that's done in a way that creates safety for everyone or not. And so that can be both an in-the-moment thing, like a facilitation thing in the moment, or it can be to do with how the group is actually set up in the first place. So since these questions have all come from women running women's groups, I'll just speak to that side of the equation. So rather than make the assumption that women are emotionally safe and that men are not, how about vetting your group for emotional intelligence, like if that's the issue at play, and whether individuals are ready for the work, regardless of the gender? Because that's actually going to be a more accurate measure than just assuming that, in this case, women are more emotionally intelligent and ready for that self-development work, and men are not. Even if that's true in general, I'm not saying it is or it isn't, I don't care. And having said that in a gendered way, all of that's obviously true. Same applies for men's groups. Do you really need to do that work in men's groups? If it feels like it's unsafe or less free if women are present, does that mean you should maybe have a little bit of a think about how you're saying some of the things? Or is that maybe something that should be done? Is that a sort of a challenge that should be welcomed, like the challenge of having other genders present? That could be amazing to lean into that. If you're running some kind of a group and it does feel like it's about, yeah, safety or some kind of awkwardness, perhaps there's other ways that that could be addressed. So name the issue. So in your material at the start of the workshop, and maybe even if you're worried that, like, say, people are going to crack onto each other and get, sometimes people get sexually competitive. Obviously, there's an assumption of heteronormativity in the background there. Sorry about that. But one of the reasons people give for not having mixed gender groups is because people get sexually competitive, which takes away some of the advantage of the group. Then name it and just be really clear and say, this is not a space for that. Do not use it for that. And also teach people boundaries. Like, teach people the boundaries of, like, how to say thanks but no thanks. That's an incredibly part of people's self-development. That's an incredible skill to go through the world with, which is really sadly lacking at the moment. So yeah, maybe there's a way you can build that in, and it's going to be a really powerful lesson. If it is just a question of, on some level, preferring one gender just because, I don't know, you like them more, or it's easier, or something about that just feels like it fits better, or you've just decided that that's where you want your business model to be or your activism work or whatever, then just be honest with yourself about that being a preference. Because calling it a safety issue actually does harm. Like, it contributes to this idea, like the man versus bear debate. It contributes to harm in that it contributes to this idea that you just can't, you're not safe if you're around the other gender. And a lot of harm flows from that. It's interesting to note that if you go back to the 1950s, when women were coming into the workforce, men used exactly the same line as a way to keep women out of workplaces and out of education. As in, they said, well, no, it's not safe for us to have women around. Using that as a reason to keep women out. And I think what they really meant was, we want this space for ourselves, and women will ruin it or change it or constrain our freedoms or liquidate our benefits or something like that. I don't know the details. But yeah, the same pattern was there, and that men were saying it's a safety issue when it really wasn't. And before I finish off this main point on this topic, I'd just like to say there's also an incredible benefit that comes from getting over this particular hurdle, because it's stunning what happens in groups that were perhaps separate gender groups. And when you do actually find a way to do them as mixed gender groups, and people have the experience of doing that stuff as mixed gender groups, there's an incredible amount of peace that comes from that. Safety and stability, betterness for the individuals involved, and betterness for the world. It's richer. Okay, my second main point is make it clear to the group that they are not there to other the people that are not there. So when othering comes up, so othering in this context of some kind of formal group of some description, self-development group, support group, something like that, othering is going to look like talking about something like it's gendered when it's not, or talking like you only care about the ways that it impacts your gender and just having no interest in the way that it impacts another gender, or making jokes at the expense of other genders, or making affirmations that this group is only good because it only has my gender here. And also, I guess, othering also looks like every story that's told, or every narrative that's there sort of frames the experience from the perspective of my group, my gender, victims and innocents in this story, and the other gender are perpetrators or dangerous or negative or something like that. So that's all the way that groups tend to other the other gender. What are some examples there? Well, just some examples that I heard the other day was a gendered group. Okay, so these were examples of women's groups talking about being screwed over by the health system, as if that's something that only happens to women. And another one that comes up all the time is talking about sexual assault as something that only happens to women. You do get variations of this in men's groups as well. There's ways talking about being ignored or regarded as dangerous just because of your gender. That's actually a shared issue. Another one that comes up is being misunderstood around gender issues. That's actually something that all genders relate to. So they're all the ways that we set ourselves up, the groups set themselves up, as not only are they a gendered group, but they then want to tend to amplify that and exaggerate it. So just as the holder of that space, as the facilitator, don't let the group do that. Make sure you're balancing out those comments. And I've heard of a couple of people take a policy, which is to say you actually can't talk about gender in this group as a way of forcing people to speak in the first person only. So I feel fucked over by the medical system. That's a perfectly legitimate, valid statement. It's your story. As opposed to saying, oh, women are fucked over by the health system and men are not. That gets into complicating territory. So it's really interesting. It's counterintuitive, but just simply banning generalizations or statements about gender actually solves the problem. And the last point I thought of on this was you as a facilitator can actually make sure you're representing, or that someone is representing, the groups that are missing from your group. So, that could be a statement like, I know this feels like a gendered issue, but I'm thinking about my other friend who's of a different gender who also experienced this situation, or whatever. Just make sure they're represented, and make sure they're represented positively. And if the group, or if individuals really strongly don't want to do that, then that could be a signal that they actually want to be on one side. They actually don't want to be at peace with other genders. And I think you need to tackle that for what it is. Okay. Next bit of feedback is that the illusion, or rather, that's not the right word, the obsession with women's lack of safety is not actually empowering. And so in talking you through this bit of feedback, I'm merging two people wrote in with a very similar thing here. So I'm sort of merging those bits of feedback together. This is in response to something I mentioned around some research which was done following, I think, the Boston Massacre off the top of my head, which found that if you've watched 90 minutes of media about that incident, you're actually more traumatized than if you are at the original event. So it's a really nuanced reframing of what happens when we live in a world, a media world, which is playing on our fears and insecurities, essentially. So the feedback is along the lines of saying, yeah, look, I realize I've sort of been in that world, and that it's felt like it's been part of my duty and empowerment to read and share a lot of scary articles about what happens to women and the way women are treated in this world. And I've also felt that it's my duty, sort of in response to that, to sort of run my life and to exist in women's circles and to very much shape my life only around women, because that's all that's safe. And then maybe I use men for sex or something like that, and to regard men by default as a danger and a threat. And as a result of that, I'm scared to leave the house. I'm scared to do anything. I can't relate to the men around me because I'm too scared of them. And I'm in a constant state of anxiety about my safety in the world, which bizarrely does not actually match my lived experience in the world. Like, I've had a pretty safe experience in this world, and yet my anxiety and the way I feel within me is that I am constantly under threat. And I'm also forever furious with the world and for the men around me for hating me. And again, that doesn't actually match my lived experience. But it's just the paradigm I'm operating under. And what I'm discovering and what I would like to feed back to you, Rog, is to say, yeah, that is not actually empowering for me. It is the opposite of empowering. The only winner out of this game is the media, and the losers are me and men. Okay. Next bit of feedback is around why women don't turn up to workshops. The context here is I had an opportunity with someone to really get into a long conversation about the content in Pan Political, including like drunkenly screaming at each other in the best possible way. Like, just we're both just so excited and enthusiastic about this subject material, and, you know, not agreeing on all of the details, agreeing on many, and also furthering each other's thinking on many things. It was just really fun. Best case scenario of talking about this subject material. Anyway, one issue that they wanted to bring to me, one thing that they firmly disagreed with, let's say, was in, I've forgotten what episode, but I was talking about, maybe it was the episode around whether or not the world is built around male sexuality. And somewhere in there, I spoke about how when I was running workshops on sexuality, women were more likely to not turn up than men. So if it was a, you know, if it was a workshop where I was aiming for an approximately equal balance of men and women, I would always slightly oversell female tickets because women were less likely to turn up. And in the podcast, I notched that up to essentially abundance of saying women have a lot of things to go to of this caliber. Men, not so much. Male tickets are quite hard to come by and sell out extremely quickly, whereas women can generally buy tickets, you know, more or less up to the last moment. And I see that not just in my experience with workshops, but that's a sort of standard throughout any of the sector where you're exploring your sexuality. And in the podcast, I said that that was from, yeah, like from abundance, that ticket is not so important. Whereas, you know, men will come along even if their house is on fire. And so the feedback I got around that is yes, perhaps, but it's also to do with safety. And the conversation did actually go quiet because I often do that when safety is mentioned. It's kind of a, you know, I don't want to be and I don't want to come across as someone that doesn't care about women's safety. So it's a bit of a conversation stopper in some ways. But on this occasion, I followed up with the person and just said, you know, hey, can I, this was after our initial conversation, said, Killer, you're referring to, are you talking about, you know, getting to or from the event? Are you talking about things at the event? Are you talking about attracting stalkers? And the person said, actually, it's probably more to do with fear. So fear of interactions not going well. If it's a workshop that includes the opportunity or possibility of touch exercises, which is really common amongst tantra workshops, kink workshops, etc., then it's a fear of those interactions going badly. So yeah, I want to say thank you. I get it, and I'm sorry. I did get a little one-sided on that, and I dropped that factor from my analysis. And I'm really appreciative of having that brought to my attention. And I completely agree. I also have a further thought. But yeah, I completely agree. So as part of the feedback, as part of that conversation, there was a sense that that sort of fear and that safety element is predominantly or significantly more a female experience. So questionable behaviors are more likely to happen to women than they are to men in those sexuality spaces. And I'm not denying that that's real. But I do want to add something which I think is worth thinking about, which is based on my experience of teaching about 10,000 people how to do touch and communication around sex and so forth. And what I want to think about is the way we are primed. So we all know about the concept of leading questions. Like if we're interviewing someone, we know we need to ask open-ended questions that don't sort of lead a person towards a particular answer. Because you might say that the question itself can prime us to think in a certain way or to give certain answers. It can shade and influence our thinking. And I think in the sexuality game and in the dating game, we're all very strongly primed at the moment that men are perpetrators or men have the potential to be perpetrators and women get assaulted or have the potential to get assaulted. That's the story of our time at the moment, and it's sort of that the person's feedback is built around. So I think that dominant paradigm has the possibility to pattern our own experiences. So what I've observed is that women are often hypervigilant for inappropriate behaviour happening towards them. Or you might say women have a well-tuned, finely tuned radar for inappropriate behaviour, and men often just don't have a framework for the idea that they could be on the receiving end of inappropriate behavior. It's almost like those things can't happen. So consequently, I've had many occasions, and I mean many, 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 many occasions of observing things in workshops or sexuality spaces, both mine and others. So either observing things or discussing them with co-facilitators afterwards and asking the question of like, if the genders were reversed in this situation, would this be a problem? Would this behavior be a problem? So when we've seen, people who run sexuality stuff, professionals in the space, we're already well primed to keep an eye out for inappropriate behavior from men towards women. So I'm talking about situations where a woman is doing something to a man and I'm asking my co-facilitators, would this be a problem if we flipped the genders? And the answers have often been absolutely yes, without a shred of doubt. But neither party in the exchange has clocked it. She's not aware that she's doing something that she would regard as suspicious if the roles were reversed, and he has absolutely no idea that what is happening to him was outside of consent or was not by according to what's meant to be happening, and so forth. Or that, he's just been shamed for a boundary or something like that. All of the usual things. This also matches experiences I've had in my life, in my dating life. Sometimes I've had to gender flip things with someone I'm interacting with and say something like, how would you feel if a man did blah, blah, blah to you? Because that's exactly what you just did to me. And it's a stunning moment when people realize how filtered their vision is around this stuff. So I absolutely agree with the feedback. When I was talking about this, I didn't think about safety and fear as a reason. I'm sorry about that. And I appreciate the feedback. I don't know, and I'm not suggesting that I'm in any position to say that things are equally complicated between the genders in these spaces. It doesn't matter to me. But I do note that our filters and the ways that we're primed to see things very much impacts our impressions. And either way, men might still have a motivation to ignore those risks, even if on some level they're aware of them. How about that capitalism, huh? I want to talk with you about a weird way that capitalism is actually kind of functional. It's to do with this podcast. Firstly, I want to stress it's okay for you to just listen to this and not contribute. I say just listen because it's not nothing. By just listening to it, you're engaging with my material, you're probably having chats about it with others, and really, that's all I'm doing this for. I can tell that you are there because I can see you in the total number of downloads, and it means a lot to me. This relationship works for me. It's okay to just listen. At the same time, I know that some of you want to show a more active level of support and are in a position to do so. This is where capitalism comes into it and doesn't actually do a half bad job. I've set up a Patreon page, which, in short, is an easy way for you to contribute. And it's very meaningful to me. I used to be skeptical about paying for podcasts, but eventually I had to ask myself how it differs from paying for books, or for videos, or for workshops, or for therapy, all of which I pay for pretty consistently. And this, my friends, is my version of a book, or a workshop, or a whatever. So I feel okay about asking for a donation through Patreon, if you're in a position to do so, and this has been meaningful for you. So the link is in the show notes and also on the Curious Creatures website. If you're not in a position to contribute, please don't feel guilty about listening to this for free. I appreciate you, and I appreciate having you on this ride with me.